Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight. It is the Business Day's podcast just around the issues of the economy, business, what's going around in the world of commerce, and everything that has to do with the South African economy. So for today, we are discussing quite a bit of a topical issue, just around some of the issues that are going on in the job sector. We heard a few weeks ago that unemployment has been ticking up a little bit, and it's at the center of a lot of concerns just around the disruption of technology. And in studio, we are joined by two gentlemen that are going to be, you know, participating in the discussion. As we talk about this, first we're going to be talking to Fanny Botha, who is the COO of Fairtech, and he actually, you know, wrote an interesting piece recently just around the fact that technology has become a bit of a competitive edge in a lot of industries, and that companies and organizations can actually save a lot of money by actually implementing I think it's RPA, right? Robotic process automation.
That's correct.
Yes. just around that. And he was also just talking about the fact that in as much as all of that is going on, there are a lot of opportunities to be reskilling people and actually reorienting the economy. And we're also joined in studio by Joe Kokela, who is from SASBO, the Finance Union, and we're going to be talking to them. We know that we actually had an episode a few weeks ago just around what was going on in the banking sector, just around how technology has been actually disrupting the way that consumers are actually interacting with the banking sector. So we thought that this would be an interesting way to actually enter the discussion. And through the discussion, we're also just going to be having some comment coming from COSATU. We spoke to them earlier on, and that was with Matthew Parks. So, gentlemen, just to enter into the discussion, I just thought, you know, maybe we can just hear, you know, the counter, because we hear a lot about how, you know, technology is coming, and we spoke to Matthew Parks from COSATU earlier on, and he was just highlighting how technology is here, but then it's going to have some detrimental effects on, you know, jobs, employment, and the like. And this is what he had to say.
As a trade union, our major concern is about the very dangerous and possibly massively negative impact upon jobs. We already have 40% of workers unemployed. We have about 400,000 young people entering the economy every year. And yet our economic growth rate is barely at 1%. It's largely jobless. So our fear is that as the fourth industrial revolution gains momentum, and it will do so, that we might see a job bloodbath, that many of our low-skilled jobs right now might become redundant and automated. And we're not exploiting the economic opportunities to create new industries and new jobs and companies to make sure those workers whose jobs are at risk would find alternative employment. So for us, it's a ticking time bomb. And we can't afford to sleep on the wheel as a nation around it.
Gentlemen, just to begin, you know, the discussion, just, you know, perhaps some thoughts. Fanny, I'll just start with you, and then I'll move on to Joe. As I said at the beginning, you wrote about this. What actually prompted you to write that particular piece? We understand your firm is a 4IR, you know, sort of oriented organization, but can you just tell us what prompted you to write, and what does your organization actually do?
Hi, Madia. Hi, Joe, and hi to the listeners. Thank you very much for this opportunity. So I think the fourth industrial revolution is really something that we as an organization is passionate about. And the other edge that we're passionate about is job creation in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll speak a bit more about that later.
Mm.
But essentially, the first three industrial revolutions and the growth of technology up until this point has been a very closed process.
Mm.
So if you think about being a technologist or a developer of some sort,
yeah,
you would have had to get intensive training. You would have had to be on some tertiary education level, whereas the fourth industrial revolution has really democratized these technologies.
Mm.
we are finding on a daily basis that people who have been in a specific line of business, not technology related, so this might be an admin clerk, a finance clerk, a receptionist at a dentistry, they are very quickly adopting some of these fourth industrial revolution technologies. And I think this just really opens up the technology sector to a lot of different sectors that previously you could have argued were excluded from this. So I think the threat is in the reverse. It's the people who really had like a lock on this thing and were protected by the exclusiveness of it that now need to start thinking about how do they get on the same train.
Yeah. Actually, before I move on to Joe, I just want to get a sense from you, from the research you've done, do you get a sense that the third industrial revolution had the same sort of friction as what we're experiencing now, simply because people went from horse-drawn carriages and, you know, assembling cars by hand to, you know, things like that. Do you think there was just as much friction or is there more now?
Absolutely. So I think this is something that you can write books about and that people have written books about. But I want to take you back to two different slices of history. And yeah. The one being the Luddite era in the old English times, where master craftsmen, weavers, were essentially being replaced, well, in their minds at least, by automated looms.
Yeah.
So steam-driven looms that could weave cloth much faster than the previous crafters could.
Yeah.
The end effect of the automated loom era was actually that a lot of people who could not previously buy more than one garment in a year could now regularly buy clothes, and this increased their self-worth. And what happened to the master crafters that previously were the only people to be able to operate the loom is they became artists. Yeah. They did not decrease, but the worth of their skill increased to the point where they could demand much higher prices for the stuff that they were making.
Yeah.
The second bit of history that I just want to recall is when spreadsheet applications started to enter into our business world. Now, we're not supposed to name specific products, but there's one that excels in the market. And I'm sure when these types of technologies started entering the workplace, the people who were good with numbers on a page previously, typically accountants and auditors, must have feared for their jobs. Now, 25 years on, if we look at the end effect of that is we've got no fewer accountants, but what actually has happened is people that might not have a top-level accounting degree has now been included into this financial processing market, where they can do a lot of the preparation and reconciliation work on the spreadsheets, and they just leave it up to the auditor to do the final checks.
Yeah.
But the best thing about this is you don't have these highly trained, very expensive professionals doing simple writing down of numbers on pages, because all of the repetitive things is happening on a computer.
Joe, your take, simply because, you know, Fanny is, you know, giving us the history lesson, but, you know, today in 2019, you guys have been faced with that threat of, you know, possible strikes. 30, 40,000 people, you know, saying that they actually want to go on the streets because they're fearing exactly what he's talking about, that whatever's going on now is going to result in those jobs going away. What is your take, and how are you actually communicating, you know, that to the industry and, you know, some of the employees that you guys have?
Thank you. And thanks, Fanny. I think taking from where Fanny, you know, was,
yeah,
especially when I started talking about the history.
Yeah.
If you look at the evolution of unions,
yeah,
in fact, unions just came just after the first industrial revolution.
Okay.
And the coming of the unions during the first industrial revolution, it helped a lot because of it started to facilitate the transaction between the industry as well as the workers.
Yeah.
Then we've also seen with the second, you know, industrial revolution and the latest one of 1969, which is the third industrial revolution.
Mm.
So when you look at all three revolutions, you realize that the way they were done, in fact, they created more work than any other thing.
Okay.
So much as they've created work, you ask yourself to say, what has gone wrong now with the fourth industrial revolution? Because of we're thinking that given the complex of the fourth industrial revolution, we were going to see more jobs being created. But in this country, we've got a problem where, especially within the finance institution, where there is a competition, which does not really make the industry to come forward and say, these are the skills that will be needed going to the future.
Mm.
So all that we're looking at as the union is to say, how do we address the demands of the fourth industrial revolution, looking at the future world of work?
Yeah.
And looking at that future world of work, all that we're looking at is to say, how are we going to equip the people that we have, this workforce now, to prepare them for the challenges of the fourth industrial revolution?
Mm.
So unfortunately, because of the competition that we're experiencing in the country, it's really making it so difficult for the industry to come forward and say, these are the skills that they will be needed, you know, going forward to make sure that we address the fourth industrial revolution. So given that as the union as SASBU, we had to go out and do our own research.
Okay.
And in doing our own research, we looked at those countries where already there is this issue. Before we even started talking about the fourth industrial revolution, people started talking about digitalization, started talking about automation, started talking about digitization.
Yeah.
So we went out of the country, we went as far as Europe, so as to understand what does this future world of work entails. We were in Germany, we were in Holland, we even went into the Scandinavians.
Mm.
We were in Sweden and Denmark. So as for us to understand, you know,
what's going on
and what will be the challenges that the unions on the other side are facing, and what is the relationship between the employer and the unions in those areas.
Mm.
And what we've realized was that, especially in the Scandinavians, in Denmark and Sweden, we've realized that there is a serious agenda that is between the unions and the government, as well as business.
Yeah.
To an extent that they've even gone out to get the small guys who are fintech into the room and say, how do we assist into making sure that we create jobs?
Yeah.
How do we make sure that anyone who will be affected during their job will create something that we call the second chance career? So in this country it's not happening.
Mm.
And much as it's not happening, we believe as the union with SASBU and COSA to the day, the country, especially on the side of the financial institutions, we are not ready. We are not yet there.
Mm.
And we believe that the companies are running ahead within them understanding what does future of wealth entails.
Yeah.
So it's where we've got a problem as the unions. That is why you saw us in September wanting to take our people out for a protest.
Mm.
Because of we feel that the companies are doing it alone. And as they're doing it alone, they don't have a plan.
Yeah.
They just sleep, they wake up, the next day they affect people.
Yeah.
So all that we're seeking for as the unions is to say, where is their plan?
Mm.
So that you can be part of the plan, you know, going forward and make sure that we create more jobs.
Yeah.
As finance said, to say, you know, when you look at the fourth industrial revolution, it has a lot of other things to make sure that it will create opportunities for other people. So it is set. You know, the other time we were in Kenya, as well as in Tanzania. When we were there, we realized how fast are they teaching their kids, especially when it comes to basics of technology, you know, coding.
Yeah.
Any child in Kenya, coding is like a toy, you know, to them. But you come back to South Africa, you find Joe Kokela, you find Fanny, he still does not even understand what coding is all about because of we've never introduced into this thing. So coding in those countries has been taken from crutch.
Yeah.
It's taken from the kindergarten. So it's a toy. Kids are playing with these things.
Mm.
So we want to see the South Africa that will move towards that, where we'll start to say, how do we all of us get involved? You know, when you go to Singapore, Singapore has embraced this thing to an extent that they've created smart city for smart people.
Yes.
So they've even encouraged the pensioners to be able not to go and queue like in South Africa or whatever, but they can get their social grant sitting at home using the technology.
Yeah.
So, and they've even have started to say, how do they take technology into the people's house so that the Singapore can be purely an industrial sort of a country?
Yeah.
So that is what we're aspiring for as the unions in this country.
We're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back on the other side of this.
The cryptocurrency revolution is a rabbit hole that goes deeper than just Bitcoin and blockchain. South Africa's revolutionary cryptocurrency investment platform, Revix, presents Beyond Bitcoin, your guide to the crypto future. Unpack the news, trends, and terminology live every Monday on The Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. You can also download every episode on the Cliff Central app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Business Day Spotlight. Very interesting discussion. We've got Fanny Botha from 4IR Tech together with Joe, who is from SASBO. Talking about this issue of technology and how it's disrupting the job markets, but how there are opportunities out there. Just before the break, Joe was actually telling us about some of the research that they've done, having gone into countries like Kenya, Singapore, the Scandinavian countries, just to see how those economies have been realigned to actually take advantage of this new progression. What I'm going to do is just play something from Matthew Parks just around the opportunities that are there, and then allow Fanny to at least also articulate where he actually sees some of the opportunities going forward. Very articulate history lesson earlier on about the loom, so I want to know, where are we going after this?
Look, there are huge opportunities, and we had a very good presidential job summit last year where we literally went through opportunities, obstacles, interventions per sector of the economy. Literally the sky is the limit. We need to, for example, the mining industry, we know we're bleeding jobs in the mining industry, but we have an opportunity to create jobs by making mining machinery and equipment locally instead of importing it. Government has done very well working closely with the industry and labor to protect the car industry, the auto manufacturing sector. We managed to increase exports by 10% this year. We think we can do more, and the government sectoral plan is developed with labor and industry is to increase our production from 350,000 now to 600,000 and then 1.2 million cars. But even the electric vehicle industry is rapidly growing internationally. We've done very little as a nation to grow it locally. That's a huge opportunity, and it can be win-win, because that one will help to reduce our fossil fuel production in terms of pollution and damage to the environment, but you'd also be creating a stable demand base for electricity, which would also help to save Eskom. So really, this is the opportunity on every single front, but it requires a sense of consciousness from business, a sense of political will from government.
Now, Fanny, what I wanted to perhaps bring you in on is in your piece, there's something that really interested me, and it was the fact that when we talk about the disruption in jobs, etc., we're usually talking about unskilled labor, right? But one of the things you highlight is the fact that even in the skilled part of the economy, there are opportunities. You kind of touched on them earlier on when you talked about the spreadsheet. But what I like is that it doesn't isolate, I guess, the greater problem to one sector of society, but you are just highlighting the fact that it's an across-the-board thing, right? That, no matter where you are, there is a threat that a piece of technology could, quote-unquote, take your job, but there's also an opportunity to actually upskill yourself. So where are you seeing, some of those opportunities? I see IDC and stuff like that. Where are you seeing some of the opportunities?
Sure. Thanks, Madiwa. So if I can just jump on the tail end of Joe's geography lesson I've just had. So I've actually previously lived and worked in Asia for 3 years, and I became quite fascinated with Singapore, Korea, and China. And what struck me by them is that they almost missed the second industrial revolution. And they realized that with the third industrial revolution, they've got a unique opportunity to jump onto that. Mm. And I mean, if we look at most people's smartphones, they come from Korea and China, which weren't known for the second industrial revolution. Now, I think one of the key things is they realized that they've got people.
Yeah.
And it sounds silly,
yeah.
but they've got people at in different industries, operating at different levels of the game. So there might be a person who's really good with their hands, and that person could become really good at picking and placing microprocessor boards. There's maybe someone who's previously had computer training, but we should put incentives in place to take that guy out of possibly a job that was not contributing to the central function and move him to some sort of a microprocessor design type thing. So for me, the theme that comes out of those countries, it very much starts with the central vision and incentives being put in place in that regard. Now, in terms of you mentioning that it's not just on one industry, one level of worker that this is going to be applied, is I think the key difference in the fourth industrial revolution compared to all of the previous industrial revolutions. So in that sense, something that we've seen in our customers is that the person that's going to be most affected by this technology that's introduced needs to be the champion of that initiative. And we've actually, in that regard, started programs with some of our customers where we can label it as innovation awards, and people can bring a business case for the repetitive tasks or the non-value-adding things that they do in their days to be a candidate for automation.
Okay.
And what we've seen in that regard then is those people get training on becoming a level of business analyst, which is cross-skilling them. They get training on the technology, even if they don't want to become extremely deeply involved in programming or configuring that technology, they are able to retrain those skills to other members of the organization.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they speak from a point of credibility, because they were a person that was in that job. And then ultimately, they demonstrate how this technology has not threatened their job in any way, but it's empowered them to spend more time on value-adding activities and breathening essentially their skills base. So this is really critical. Where previous industrial technologies might have come in from the outside with management saying, this thing is happening whether you like it or not, I believe we now need to go to the people that will be affected and make them the champions of this technology.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I like that, and I'll be interested in your response. But whilst you're also responding, can we also maybe start getting into what the disconnect is? Because it really sounds like we are all in agreement that this technology is here. But why haven't we been able, like you said before the break, been able to articulate some of those plans for the future, or how do we actually, you know, move ourselves forward?
Look, thanks. The disconnect here, it's the competition nature that we have in this country.
Okay.
And the competition nature that we have in this country, it speaks to the industries, especially within the financial institutions. All that they have to do is to see how they maximize the profits.
Yeah.
And that kind of a competition, it makes us not to have a cooperation where we have to cooperate and say to ourselves, what is it that we can do as the country to make sure that we move forward in making sure that we become a smart country. So it's where the disconnect is. And the other thing, I think if you followed the strike demands of SASBO that time, you could have seen that one of the major things that was picked up by the workers was that it's not about the fourth industrial revolution in this country, where people are losing jobs, especially within the banking sector.
Yeah,
it's all about the corporate grid.
Okay.
So that it can also be part of a disconnection. And one other thing that we find ourselves to be as the country, and those it's our how we analyze the situation at SASBO, after we've gone and after we've been all over, and as Fanny is saying that, you know, all that you have to do is to make sure that you make people to take ownership of their development, and that development, it also has to be encouraged, you know, from somewhere. But what I've picked up is that in South Africa, we've got structures.
Okay.
Like one, we've got the SETAs. I mean, the Sector Education Training Authority.
Yes.
If you go to other countries where they don't have this, it's where you realize that now there is that kind of a partnership between labor, you know, government, and business. Mm. So as to make sure that all, the three of them, they form a tripartite alliance that will say, how do we really become relevant? And how do we really make sure that we look at how can we deal with the fourth industrial revolution? But in this country, it's not happening. In this country, we are operating in silos. Mm. And much as we're operating in silos, we are all looking at what is it that will benefit. And one other thing that is destroying us in this country is that everybody wants to be the champion. Everybody wants to be the first person who will come with whatever. And that is a problem. But if we can start to say, because of now I'm listening to Fanny, I'm saying to myself, what an opportunity that we're missing as the country from what he's saying.
Yeah.
And if we would have got people like Fanny and the other guys who will really help us, you know, to understand this thing, and who will help us to say to ourselves, this is what we, you know, as a FETEC, see the future to be. And the much as we see the future to be of the of working wealth, then we believe that if people have got this kind, because all that we need is the basics.
Yeah.
If we can get the basics right of the technology, then I'm telling you that we might be seen to be participating, you know, and competing, you know, with the world. Because of, as I said to you, is to say, I mean, if you look at the SETAs, if the SETAs can really make sure that all the SETAs in this country now, they'll be set to, or they'll be instructed to say, let us invest in the fourth industrial revolution. And investing in the fourth industrial revolution, you get the funds who will come in and say, this is the scope.
Mm.
And if we can all agree to say, let's follow the scope, I'm telling you that they will be able to save the country and save the job and make sure that we create more jobs. And as we create more jobs, and then we'll make sure that we alleviate poverty, and we'll even see, you know, job opportunities, you know, coming up. And we know that if there's those kind of job opportunities, that will also boost the economy.
Mm.
But the way we're doing things, we'll keep on talking to economy that will grow less than 1% because of we are so divided as the country, especially when it comes to the 14th Industrial Revolution.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, we are saying that there needs to be more cross-pollination, you know, people, it can't just be, you know, SASBO versus, let's say, the banking sector, but the banking sector needs to, you know, engage with SASBO. SASBO needs to engage with someone like Fanny, who's doing massive research and say, where are we going? And then actually help to advise these two parties on how to, you know, move forward. Like, if I'm understanding you correctly.
You've just mentioned one. In fact, it has to be two.
Uh-huh.
Is the institutions, which is the finance.
Yeah.
Is the unions.
Yeah.
And then as you've got the unions, then we must have the government support.
Yeah.
So if you've got the unions, you've got the industry, you've got the government. Fanny has to be in the center of the triangle.
Yeah.
Because of now, Fanny will be able to be directing all the three to say,
this is where we're going.
This is where we're going, and this is how we, as Fanny, sees the future, you know, of wealth, you know, to be.
Yeah.
But for now, we've got a problem that everybody, they've got their own agendas.
Okay.
And unfortunately, those agendas are not on the table.
Yeah.
Those agendas are right under the table. And then, because everybody's holding their cards very close to their chest.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So that is the problem that we're facing. So all that we're calling for as the union is to say, what will stop us to come together?
Yeah.
And if we come together, because of, at some stage, we're talking about just transition.
Yeah.
So in the just transition, we're saying, get the workers, let them be part of the formulation of the agenda.
Yeah.
And if they become part of the formulation of the agenda, then we can be able to come up with programs. And then through those programs, it's where now you'll get coaching from the funders. It's where you'll get mentoring from the funders. It's where you'll get approval and accreditation at the end of the day to say, at least this person can do a particular job.
Mm.
And all that we're waiting for as the union is not for us to have a huge membership. All that we're saying is if Fanny comes in, Fanny will be able to create employability.
Yeah.
So all that we're wanting in this country is for people to be employable. That's it.
Okay. Now, as we end off the discussion, let's just hear what Kosatu's take is on this particular issue of where the disconnect is, and then we'll come back with some final thoughts.
One, I think people by their nature across the board are lazy and reactive. So essentially we're the architects of our own demise. We fail to plan, which is equal to planning to fail, as the saying goes. But look, there are some positive role models. You would know that in the clothing industry in the 90s, as tariffs were lifted, we lost about 100,000 jobs in the clothing industry in the Western Cape and KZN. We were on the verge of losing that industry completely due to cheap imports from China. Since that time, we've had a very successful tripartite pact between COSATU, industry and government to stabilize the industry, to grow it. So, for example, industry commits not to retrenching. COSATU has gone out of its way to help identify blockages. Our clothing workers union actually monitors the tender database of government and makes sure that industry applies for those clothing tenders, for example. Government also has looked at measures to kind of invest in SMEs, to invest in machinery, capital equipment, and so on, and equally to invest in the skills and training of workers. But even that's not enough, because the trends, for example, the clothing industry in China and Japan, are that 85% of those jobs there are being automated. So that obviously is something that's going to come down the road to us. So we need to look at new opportunities for the clothing industry. So we need to be very creative and smart. And look, the nice thing about technology is that it's opening new opportunities for us, but you really need to be kind of smart and see how do we see these opportunities.
So you heard them, that's Kosatu. So we've come to the end of this discussion. Can I just get some brief final thoughts very quickly, maybe 30 seconds each? Fanny, I'll just start with you. Where do you see, I guess, the country going? And when I say where do you see the country going, what are some of the simple things that you think we could attack in the next maybe 3 to 5 years that would get us maybe on the path, and then the same for Job?
Excellent, thank you. So I previously mentioned that I had been living and working in Asia, and I came back. And besides being a very, very proud South African and loving the country, I think a major driving force was that Asia is at its peak now.
Yeah.
And there's that saying to buy low and sell high.
Yeah.
And if you just read the negative reports in the media, you can get yourself into depression. But all of those indicators are actually an indication that we are trading as a really cheap stock as South Africa at the moment, which means that there's immense opportunity and immense value to be generated.
Mm.
And just as some other countries, I think, saw how they might have missed a part of the third industrial revolution. I mean, we lost the textile industry. Mm. We are now sitting on maybe the biggest opportunity in an economy's lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think it's really an exciting time to be alive, an exciting time to be in South Africa.
Okay. Joe?
So thanks. Look, all that we have to do, I think when we started, when you introduced the topic, you spoke about the kind of skills that we're looking for.
Mm.
All that we're saying is, the unions, is to say, we'll want our people to be reskilled. And if our people have been reskilled, and we also are looking at people have to be upskilled, and we're even saying at some stage we have to look at how can we multi-skill people. And that multi-skilling will not only go, there's something that we call an outskilling. And outskilling, it will mean, how do you now develop somebody's acumen to make sure that this person can also be able to do a job outside of what they are doing now? Because by so doing, you'll be unearthing a certain talent that the people might have never thought that they are able to do certain things.
Yeah.
You will go to school, you learn, you know these things, you come out, you do what you've learned from school, but you've got your own talent that is given to you.
Yeah.
So if we start to look at how can we outskill, that can also help you now to be able to embrace your own talent. So all that we want is to give people courage, and is to make sure that, from what Fanny was saying, especially on the textile and whatever, is to make sure that we all become proudly South Africans.
Yeah.
And if we become proudly South Africans, we'll be able to take pride in anything and everything that we do. So all that we need into this country is just to get those disjunctures or the things that are not bringing us together. If we can get that one right and come together and form a formidable force that will say, how do we take this forward? I think we can be able to build a very strong economy rather than to allow employers to really, get rid of people. So let's make sure that we come up with something that will create more jobs. Yeah. And then more jobs we create, there'll be opportunities, and those opportunities will boost the economy of the country.
So with that, we've come to the end of today's discussion. Very interesting. Some quick takeaways. As you heard from Joe, he's saying that we need to have a more cross-sectional plan. People need to be cross-pollinating. People need to get out of their silos if we're going to be moving the country forward. Actually come together in our various knowledge areas, the different parts of the country, labor, the private sector, the public sector coming together. Forming a plan that can be led by minds such as Fanny, who are doing that research. Some takeaway from Fanny, what he's saying is he's excited because, as far as he's concerned, it's an exciting time. There's a big opportunity. Simply because, just because you've missed one wave does not mean that you can't take advantage of whatever the next one is. He made a very good example of how the Asian countries largely missed the second industrial revolution, but were able to actually maximize quite a bit on the third one. So those are just some of the things that are set to happen. It's an interesting conversation, and I feel like it's the one that we are definitely going to continue. But on social media, you can let us know some of your thoughts on Twitter. Our hashtag is #BDSpotlight. Remember that you can also find our latest episodes of the Business Day Spotlight on Business Life. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. Remember that also you can review and subscribe for free on Iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. So for myself, Mudiwa Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.